And let me see. Right. I'm gonna set my stopwatch real quick so I can check the time.
Okay.
I try to do it in 27-minute segments.
Okay.
All right. I'm gonna start it here. Do you want to go over anything before we start the actual what's going to be broadcast?
No. If I'm not comfortable with something, I'll let you know. But I probably won't invoke that card. I don't see myself doing it.
Okay. Are you sure? I might go into your bad childhood and how it led you to kink.
I would talk with you about that, especially since you warned me about it instead of spring it on me and try to psychoanalyze me.
No, I'm just playing. All right, I'm going to go ahead and start.
I didn't have a bad childhood, but I know you're joking. I know the joke. I don't know if everyone gets the joke, but...
Yeah, I won't make it onto the air.
Is this all on right. Radio, internet,
LRN? We're on... So it's internet-based, and then we're micro-broadcast in Denver on a FM station, so it's not
a nod-nod, wink-wink FM station?
Exactly.
Yeah, all right. Yeah.
Okay.
How long have you been doing the show, and how often do you do it? Is this part of the show already? It should be.
Oh, let me hold on real quick. Let me hit.
Because we're talking about radio, so, and that was the topic, right, or one of them.
Yeah, absolutely. I'm going to do my little intro real quick, okay?
Sure.
All right. Ladies and gentlemen, boys and girls, sentient creations of all shapes, colors, and sizes, welcome back to another exciting episode of the Live Free FM podcast/broadcast. I am your host, Nathan Frazier, and tonight I have somebody who I've been listening to for a long time and picking up a lot of really great tips along the way, and hopefully we'll kind of talk about some of that stuff tonight. But I've got Michael W. Dean from the Freedom Fiends.
The Fetus and, Fiends.
There you go. And also a very, a great movie, in my opinion, the Guns and Weed movie that was making its rounds and still continues to make its rounds. And Michael, how you doing? Thanks for joining us.
I'm doing good, and that's Guns and Weed. I've done a re-edit of it. It was called Guns and Weed, The Road to Freedom. It's now called Guns, Weed, and Anarchy, The Road to Freedom. And you can watch it free or download a DVD ISO torrent or buy the DVD at, gunsandweed.com. And my radio show, Freedom Fiends, is freedom. And then the second word is fiends, foxtrot, echo, November, Sierra.com. And then I have since we're talking about radio today and audio, I'll talk about anything, but I could always talk about that. And you said you want to talk about that. I have a blog called Creamy Radio Audio at creamyradioaudio.com that has a lot of my tips and tricks for getting caviar sound on a cat food budget.
And I love your site. Actually, I recommend your site, Creamy Radio Audio, to anybody that I know that wants to do podcast or radio. I always am recommending that site, and I've employed a lot of the tips and tricks on the site right now. I've actually got my room blanketed up, and I actually am using the RE20 microphone, which I absolutely love. Donators to the show, thank you very much. We had a discussion about a week ago, 2 weeks ago on Facebook about I had to replace my mixer, and I ended up going with that Behringer that you recommended, and I absolutely love it. So listeners, if you guys want to up your game in the podcast or broadcast venue, Creamy Radio Audio is probably one of the most, one of the sites that I could recommend with the most honesty, that is one of the ones that has really helped me up my game. So thanks for that, Michael.
Yeah, and I would recommend if you're going there to try to figure out right away how to make a podcast and want to know everything right away instead of looking through the whole site. There's a new link over on the right that says podcasting and radio in purple lettering and shows a little image of a hand on a mixing board. That leads to a page that links two videos on YouTube I did that are about one's 90 minutes, one's 60 minutes, that are pretty much everything, almost everything I know about doing podcasting and radio.
And that's actually one of the things that I really wanted to have you on the air for, is the fact that you do your own professional, I guess. You're actually on 33 different networks at this time?
33 different radio stations. And let me rephrase the thing I said of everything I know is in those two videos. Definitely not everything I know is in those two videos, but enough to start from zero and not spend a lot of money and do a really good sounding podcast out of the box without having to look around at a lot of different things or in those two videos. And I guess I'd say it's a professional radio show because it is, it started as a podcast. As far as I know, it's the only podcast that has progressed to being on syndicated radio. There could be others, but I asked Michael Harrison, who runs Talkers Magazine, which is an industry magazine for talk radio, and he said he didn't know of anybody, any. And if there were any that admitted it, he would know it. There might be some that don't admit it. I'm proud of it. Yeah, and I guess we're professional because, I don't know, I make about $75 a month working about 30 hours a week. Which is really just a hobby that covers its expenses. But I guess if you make a little money at something, you're a professional. So yeah, it's a professional radio show.
Absolutely. And since we're talking about it, what is the Freedom Fiends for listeners that maybe have not come across what you guys do?
It started as a podcast April Fool's Day, 2011. With myself and a guy named Nima Vidati, who a lot of people have probably heard. He does rap music and does a lot of interviews. Have you interviewed him?
I have not, but he's one of the next guys that I want to get on.
Yeah, he's always up for doing an interview because he had a kid and he's working more than full time and he's married. But so he doesn't really have time to do a radio show the same time every day anymore. But he does miss it. So I can't speak for him, but I will almost guarantee he'll say yes if you ask to interview him, especially if you say that I suggested it. He's a great guy. And he kind of took me the last mile, it was a year before that in 2010, we started working on the Guns and Weed movie together. And he took me the last mile from ultra minarchist to straight up anarcho-capitalist. You know, I was still, it's kind of funny because I've heard people say this and it's very true. Given the right evidence, an open-minded statist can go from total statist to minarchist in about an hour, but it takes a lot of people years. You know, and that's a journey of like 998 miles. And to go that last mile or two to full on anarchist can take years. You know, you cling to these statements that you learn in government school and get reinforced in Boy Scouts and get reinforced by having family members in the military and, you know, listening to people on shiny television network saying that, you know, without the government, there'd be blood in the streets and there wouldn't be roads and grandma would be eating dog food and children would be working as prostitutes. And, you know, you have to actually talk to somebody who can explain to you why none of that is true. And even then, you know, I clung to the last little bit of it for a while, but then I met Nima Vidati and he kind of led by example. And I think that's a really good way to transmit liberty. You know, a lot of people want to hit you over the head with it and want to be mean to you if you don't get it. And, you know, want to, you know, to quote Steve Albini, like dangle it like a severed head in front of your face and say, face the truth, you fool. I know more than you. And, you know, I think you can catch more flies with some hardcore honey than with vinegar. You know, you don't have to be sweet and light, but you know, I like to say, I'll take it all the way to the macho libertarian flash. If I don't think drugs should just be legalized, I think there should be heroin and vending machines, but I'm not going to say, you know, oh, can you cuss on here?
I don't podcast, need to. I don't, yeah. Okay. Let's avoid okay. it. But if okay. it slips out, it's
yeah,
okay.
Well, I'm on radio five days a week, so 6 or 7 days altogether. So, I revel in the chance to not cuss, but I'm really good at not cussing, so I won't cuss. You know, when people say like, you know, you're a friggin' welfare queen if you're in the military, you know, that's not going to win any hearts and minds, man. So I like to be the tough but fair, tough love, but not smack you or kick you when I'm trying to deal with somebody of teaching them about liberty. And also I know when to walk away. A lot of people waste a lot of time arguing with people who are constitutionally incapable of being honest with themselves, to paraphrase AA, and aren't willing to consider options and consider evidence and just want to defend the state like they're defending their family, those people you'll probably never win, and you should walk away from them and not waste your time.
And one of the things that I've noticed about your show in particular that really stands out from a lot of the other alternative media shows is that you guys put a lot of your own personality into it. The show itself is a reflection of your personality. It's not like so stiff and fear-mongering like a lot of alternative media is. And you guys also have a lot of fun while you're doing that.
Yeah, I think the fun is the key issue. I mean, I think a lot of people who do Liberty Media put a lot of their own, themselves into it. I mean, it's kind of like, I was having a discussion today on the Freedom Fiend site on the comments on the thread from last night's episode. And, you know, this guy named Dr. Elvis H. Christ, who I kind of like a lot. I don't know much about him, but I like his name. It's funny. You know, he was actually paraphrasing my friend Jim Jesus, another guy with a name like that. Jim Jesus said that, like, and Jim is a libertarian, but he's kind of like me. He's very into like debunking, pointing out when people are not consistent. And there's a lot of people in Liberty who are, kind of name people who are not consistent. And he pointed out that, almost every Liberty podcast or radio show or video can be summed up as four different points. The state is violence. The state is like a religion. The non-aggression principle is moral. And cops are bad. That's pretty much 95% of every podcast, book, episode, video, or public speech given by any libertarian. And there's nothing wrong with, having a new retelling of an old story that people want to hear. And there's even nothing wrong with making money at it. I don't personally try to make money at it. I try to break even. This is a recommendation I have for anybody doing Liberty Media: is do not try to quit your day job. Keep your day job. And you will do much better media, and you'll be able to say whatever you want, including calling out other libertarians when they're being horrible or, contradictory of not walking their talk. Whereas people who try to make a living at it are terrified to do that because they think they're going to lose an audience with it. And I've lost audience doing that, and I'll still do it once in a while. Because one of the libertarianism 101 things is, every libertarian ever, including the ones I criticize, have said that in a free market, you wouldn't need, consumer protection groups. It would be done by shame, but when you go to actually shame one of these people or point out their inconsistencies, none of the other named libertarians want to jump in on it, and they defend the people without looking at the evidence. And then a lot of the audience of those people are either like brainwashed by them and worshiping them in some like stateless form of the great man theory, which is just, it's weird when there's like atheists who hate the state making a great man and worshiping him to the point where they won't consider, any evidence about the man. But also, I get frustrated like beating my head over the wall with some of this stuff sometimes because, it takes like 2 hours of my time of presenting the argument to one person who's open-minded to get them to go, oh, maybe you're right. And there's thousands of people out there. It's a systemic, endemic problem in Liberty. It exists everywhere, too. It's not just Liberty. But, if the people that I criticize, like, went away and went and worked for Obama tomorrow and nobody listened to him in Liberty anymore, there'd be a new crop of them immediately. And I try to recommend to people to try to not be a great man. Just be a storyteller. Just do what you want to do. Keep the non-aggression principle in it. Find new ways to do it that aren't just opening up your Twitter feed and saying, look at this tyranny that happened today. There's enough people out there doing that, Davy Barker pointed out, if you're really into Game of Thrones, be the Libertarian Game of Thrones podcast or something, find a different angle on it. And there's nothing wrong with a retelling of the same stories over in your own voice. The people that criticize that, I mean, you might as well criticize rock bands because they're all playing basically the same three chords. No, there's new rock bands all the time, and some of them are great. And the ones that aren't to you are to somebody else. So there's a point for all of it. But when people don't walk their own talk so much that it's hard to look at certain things they do, I think you should move on and try to find someone else to look at for your entertainment and education, because there's so many people out there doing it right now. And part of what I'm doing is helping people learn to do quality Liberty Media. because I don't want to be the star. I would rather create like 100 new little stars, you know, than me be the big star.
So you bring up a really great point, and that is, whereas maybe 20 or 30 years ago, there was 5 or 6 mouthpieces and they were the ones that were writing books and there wasn't very much variety to go to. So if one of those people had to have or happened to do something incredibly inconsistent, they kind of got a free pass because they were one of 5 people. And it was like, well, we can't just throw this one guy overboard.
You had to, you know, there's a thing in AA that's about that too. I'm 20 years sober and I went to AA for, I don't know, 6 or 9 years, depending on, you know, by the end of 9 years, I was not going to meetings anymore, but I'm still sober. And I read a lot of the literature and learned a lot from it and kind of stepped away from it because it had some cult-like aspects, but it, not a destructive cult. It saved my life. And but I learned a lot from it. One of the things was that early on in AA, you know, it started in 1935. And when they were writing the traditions and the steps in 1950s, you know, the thing of anonymity, basically the reason that came up was, first of all, so since there was more of a shame attached to being an alcoholic then, and there still is a shame now by people who don't understand it's a disease. It's not a moral failing, but, you know, people could go and be anonymous and you weren't supposed to tell if you saw so-and-so at a meeting. But other than that, the other thing was like, they didn't want people to be stars in AA. And I've brought a lot of that into that and punk rock, my, you know, being in a band, into my attitudes with, Liberty. And the thing of not having stars in AA, like, you know, early on in some meeting, like some famous baseball player got sober and like they put up signs saying like, so-and-so speaking tonight at this AA meeting. And like people who weren't even in AA came, and it just kind of diluted the whole thing. Also, when the person, if he didn't stay sober and he relapsed really publicly and people knew it because they knew he was in AA, they'd say, oh, AA doesn't work. And I think that happens with Liberty sometimes, because you've got these people who kind of become rock stars in it, and they do really, you know, crazy things where like people lose a ton of money, or where they're really inconsistent, or where they use government guns to silence critics. And people look at that and they're like, I mean, you can read like articles in Vice magazine and Time magazine where like they're looking at this and saying like, or on Bloomberg, you know, financial news, and they're saying like, look at these ridiculous anarcho-capitalists and libertarians. They can't even run their own business, you know? So I think it's important to try to avoid having or making or trying to be a star in it. You know, I'm just a talker, man. I've been talking since I was 7 years old and couldn't shut up, and I'm 50. And I've had a microphone in front of my face talking almost every day since 2006 when I started podcasting, and, you know, singing almost every day since I was, you know, 17 or 18 or 19 when I first started bands. So, you know, I do what I do. I put it out there, and if people want to hear it, they can. And if they don't, fine. Yeah. So what was your question?
So my question was, now we're at a time where people can't, I mean, it used to be you had to pay $50 an hour for studio time, and you used to have multi-$1,000 mixers. And now we're at a point where pretty much anybody can put a podcast together. And some of the things that you do over at your site is show people, here's the most effective and affordable way to put a podcast together. Do you see that as a move, as a step forward for Liberty?
Absolutely. And let me finish one thing that I thought of that I forgot. I had a thought bubble in the last part was that the thing with in the 50s, you know, when there were 5 libertarian talkers or writers, you couldn't criticize one of them when they did something really, really wrong because you'd be endangering the movement. And now, and this was the thing with AA, was like there was some point in AA when they realized, like, even with anonymity, if somebody grossly breaks anonymity and, you know, is the poster child to people for AA doesn't work, at some point around the 50s or 60s, AA got so big that it like one person could not sink the boat, is how they put it. And I think we're getting to that point with Liberty. And that's my answer to people who, you know, who don't like these bad Liberty rock stars that I'm bashing, but they still say, you know, why do you keep doing this? You know, you're hurting the movement. I'm like, no, I'm helping the movement, man. And it's a big enough boat. I think being able to, I don't think infighting is good, and I don't fight with these people. I just say what I think and go away. And it's like, I think that's good for the movement. I think that's a good sign that the movement, if they're, I like to say the Liberty Mission because movement sounds collective, but I think it's good that it's to a point where it can survive that. So moving on to the question about equipment. Yeah, I think it's a good thing. And one of the things I bring to it, I'm not a stellar talker. I'm okay at it. You know, like somebody posted on Facebook today saying, "Hey, I really like your show." And he signed it like Dennis, the excellent writer or something. And I said something like, "Thank you, Michael Dean, the adequate talk show host." You know, I'm not the best one there is by far. But there's not a lot in Liberty who get good audio and do it regularly and don't pod fade. And not pod fading is a big part of the problem or a big part of the solution. And, you know, I want to encourage several hundred people to start their own podcast and help them get their audio good, because a year later of those 700, like 40 are still going to be doing a show, you know, and 5 years later, like five of them are still going to be doing a show. So there's something to be said for longevity. People get burned out on doing this because you can't make any money at it. Only a few people make money at it. Most of them are doing something sleazy or pushy to do it. And, you know, so it's pretty hard to get up every day and be at the same place at the same time and do a radio show come hell or high water. And that's part of, I wouldn't even say making a name for yourself or getting an audience, but just, you know, that is a byproduct of it. But, you know, making a difference, I mean, really, you're only as important as your last show, you know, and there are people that did great shows that pod faded, you know, 2 or 3 or 4 or 5 years ago that no one remembers. So to be a part of the current conversation of Liberty and part of the ecosystem of it, you have to keep doing it until you die in front of a microphone of a heart attack at 90, you know. But the knowledge that I have of how to do good audio, it's not rocket surgery, it's not brain science, but most people, the thing now that you couldn't do when I first started playing music was you couldn't just buy a $50 microphone and a $10 mic stand and plug it into a device you already have and make good audio. And I grew up in studios. You know, I was recording with my first band, not really grew up, but, you know, the first time I went into a studio to make a record was in 1984. I was 20 years old. It was a band called Baby Opaque in Charlottesville, Virginia. We did two records at Inner Ear Studio in DC. And, well, Arlington, Virginia, actually. That's the studio that's featured in that new Dave Grohl documentary on DC. But we were at the old location that they talk about, not the new location where it is now. And I recorded there with my band Bomb, and I recorded there with my band The Beef People. And my band Bomb also recorded three independent records and one record on Warner Brothers. So I've been in, and I've also like done a lot of demos and played on other people's stuff. So I've been in like probably 15 real recording studios in my life before anybody could ever record on a computer, you know, recording studios that were everything from like somebody in their basement where they'd soundproofed it and had like two good mics and a cassette porter studio to like, you know, 24 track studio with, you know, a couple $1 million worth of gear in it and Bill Laswell producing it and Warner Brothers paying him $30,000 to spend a month doing that on 24 track, you know, 2-inch tape. And spent a lot of time recording on one inch, eight track tape, recording whole bands and doing overdubs. And I was not engineering it, but no matter how drunk I was or hungover or jonesing for heroin or on heroin when I was in those recording studios, I was the only guy in the band, other than Doug, once we got Doug in the band and Bomb, but I was the guy keep like watching what they were doing and taking copious mental notes. So when I got my first computer that you could record on, you know, I got my first computer in like 1991, but my first computer you could record audio on was like 2005, 2006, maybe. Wait, does that sound right? No. It was 10 years before that. That was when I first started podcasting. It was 1997 that I got like a, you know, Windows 95 desktop computer homemade by some screwdriver shop in San Francisco run by a Chinese company that made cheap computers, and cheap back then meant like $900 for a computer without a monitor, with a non-brand name computer that it had like a Pentium 1 processor and 32 megs of RAM and like a 5, you know, probably a 20 meg, I don't know what the hard drive was, it was tiny compared to now, but you know, basically like less power than your iPhone has now, but it was great. And I got Sony Acid and Sony Vegas and Sony SoundForge. Or no, they were actually, it was before Sony bought them out. It was the, what was the company that made them before that? Do you know offhand?
I do not
know. Sonic that. Foundry. It was Sonic Foundry. And I started learning to record with those. And then later got, you know, Adobe Premiere and started editing video, like low res video, like not even it couldn't even do DVD, you know, 720 by 480. It was doing like, you know, 360 by 240 or something, and learned to edit video. But, and I had done like filmmaking when I was, I'd done photography on film and developed it in a darkroom when I was a teenager, and did a little bit of Super 8 filmmaking when I was a teenager and like actually cut film. And I'm not saying you have to learn that stuff first to use computers well, but having a background of all that stuff really made me grok computers and just attach myself to them like a barnacle immediately as soon as I got on them. And I've learned a lot about it. And a lot of being good with audio or anything on computers isn't knowing at all. It's being able to solve problems really quickly, or, you know, like find the solution really quickly and implement it. And now even do it live on radio. Like there are times when my co-host is having an audio problem and, you know, it's the break and we're coming back in 30 seconds. And more often than not, I can get them back up and running, you know, before we go back on the air. And that show clock of automated talk radio, I mean, it's an atomic clock, literally. And it's like it punches you in the face four times an hour and you better be ready.
Yeah. And that's one of the things that's great about your show is even if it is live, you guys are kind of like the teaching hospital for the next generation of broadcasters. So yeah. I really like that. We're coming up on a break in about 30 seconds. Do you think that you'd be able to stick around for another segment?
Sure, man. I'd love to. I'd be honored.
Okay, cool. This is Michael W. Dean from the Freedom Fiends. I can't believe I messed that up twice. Freedom Fiends. All right, we'll be right back on the other side of the break. Don't go anywhere. All right, I'm going to stop the recording and start a new one.
Yeah, let me do that too.
Creamy Radio Audio. Want caviar sound on a cat food budget? Creamy Radio Audio by the Freedom Fiends has great free tips so you can sound like a pro without spending like one. The most powerful form of human communication is one person speaking to another. But if people have to suffer through your sound, they'll change the channel and miss your message. With articles on microphones, preamps, recorders, mastering, recording remotely over the internet, doing a podcast, even getting a show on actual radio, the Freedom Fiends show you what they use and where to get it. Whether you're a talk show host, voiceover artist, podcaster, evangelist, or just want to record your loved ones for the ages, at Creamy Radio Audio, the Freedom Fiends will help you make the most of your sound. Creamy Radio Audio will help you speak to the world with sound that will make people want to keep listening. Check out creamyradioaudio.com. That's creamyradioaudio.com.
All right. Welcome back to the show. This is the second half of tonight's episode of the Live Free FM podcast. I'm your host, Nathan Frazier, and we've got Michael Dean of the Freedom Fiends. I got it right. Yay. Yeah. The Freedom Fiends radio show. You always have the most interesting intros to your show. I don't even know what to call it anymore.
Well, I was doing, this is Michael Dean from the Freedom Fiends broadcasting live and worldwide from a windowless bunker at an undisclosed location in the rural wild mountain west in the occupied states of America. But I got sick of it, and there's actually another show that cribbed it, like is just straight up doing it. I'm not going to say the name of them because they're on the same network as us. But so I wrote a new one, which I still am having to read from a script on my screen, but it's, this is the Freedom Fiends broadcasting from Pod Bay 2A, a mile above sea level at Intergalactic Prairie Studios. We alter your locus ceruleus by warming your synapses with rejuvenative radio waves. This keeps a sin flood of statism out of your brain. Can you feel it? Can you feel it? Is it working, Nathan? Can you feel it?
It is working, and I do feel it.
Cool. And and we got to point out that you wrote me like months ago about doing an interview, and I'm like, yeah, I'll do that sometime. And you wrote me tonight and said, okay, I'm to the point where we could schedule it. And I'm like, let's do it now.
Yeah. And I do appreciate that because I waited forever and instantaneously you got back. Yeah. I mean,
I'm not saying I could always do that, but I think one of the the kind of things I learned from punk rock is be pretty much available to do anything, anytime on no notice. And I'm not saying I will do any podcast on no notice, but you know, I'm familiar with you and your work and it seemed like something to do. So I was just sitting here waiting to do another interview, an hour from now, which was 2 hours from when we first started talking, thereabouts. And I was like, I got nothing to do, man. I'm just poking around on the internet. Let's do it right now. And I have my gear always set up. So I'm always 3 minutes away from being able to, you know, I just have to turn on another computer to be able to do a show. And that was the thing I learned in punk rock was like this woman named Lynn Breedlove, a friend of mine from San Francisco from a band called Tribe 8 she was a bike messenger when I was a bike messenger in the 80s in San Francisco. And she said something in this movie I did this documentary that I recommend people go find. It's called DIY or Die, How to Survive as an Independent Artist. And it's like 55 minutes long. You can watch it, you know, while you're eating lunch. It's really quick. And it's interviews with, you know, Fugazi and Lydia Lunch and a bunch of really cool people. And then a bunch of like unknown people. And I gave them equal time in it based on what they said, not who they were, which is kind of my attitude too. It's all about, you know, it's not about nepotism. It's not about appeal to authority. It's about meritocracy. And like, I learned that lesson in punk rock before I even encountered the concept of libertarianism. You know, I was kind of a libertarian and embraced a lot of the ideas before I ever heard the term. And it really resonated with me. Something she said in my interview with her in that movie, she said that, I consider every interview equally important, whether it's Rolling Stone magazine or a fanzine done by some kid in his bedroom. And I get, you know, give them an equal amount of time. And that really hit me hard. I mean, I kind of knew that already, but it really codified it into my brain early on. Because it's absolutely true. And she has been interviewed in Rolling Stone magazine and she's been interviewed in tons of fanzines, you know, when they were printed on Xerox backed by kids doing them in their bedroom. So yeah, man.
So that actually brings me to my next question. And you have a punk rock background and I come from the hip hop music industry. I actually used to do rap music for many years before I decided to pick up a microphone and do radio or quote unquote radio. What do you think it is? I've noticed this trend in both rap music, rock music, and punk rock music, where there's a lot of anti-authoritarian and quasi-libertarian people that seem to radiate in that musical environment.
Absolutely. And I'm disappointed with a lot of the punk rockers because a lot of the people that I knew in the 80s who were anarchists, they were left anarchists, you know, syndicalists or anarcho-communists, but they were anarchists, called themselves that and understood a little bit of the background of it to be able to speak to it, at least the bullet points of it. A lot of those people I'm still kind of like following on Twitter or wherever, like, you know, there wasn't even Twitter back then, but you know, I keep an eye on them. They keep an eye on me. And a lot of them like were really happy when Obama ran for president and voted for him. Like anarchists quit being anarchists to vote for a black guy who sounded like JFK when he was running for office, but sounded like Dick Cheney after elected. You know, I knew it wouldn't change anything. I mean, those are the people that taught me the phrase, if voting changed anything, it'd be illegal. Like that's an old, you know, anarchist saying from the 30s or something, but that was like painted on the back of black leather jackets, man, in white stencil, you know?
And then they turned around and voted.
Yeah, not all of them, but a lot of them.
Yeah, it's kind of funny. So we've been talking about some of the projects that you've been involved with besides the current radio show. And I personally, I wanted to interview you a while ago when I downloaded and listened to your human or Guide to Human Living.
User's Manual for the Human Experience. You can get you can get that free. There's a paperback of it on Amazon, but you can get a free audiobook of it or a free PDF or buy the Amazon book at michaelwdean.com. There's a link. It's actually michaelwdean.com/UM to whatever User's Manual for the Human Experience is in letters.
And I took advantage of that. I think I saw you post it on Facebook or something. I took advantage of it and I did listen to it and I thought it was a great book. But it seems like there's a running theme with all of the work that I've seen that you've put out, which is this very much DIY attitude, this
DIY. Do it yourself, man.
Yeah. Don't let somebody else make your dreams fulfilled. Get out there and do it yourself. And that's something that even up till today seems to permeate in a lot of your work. What is it that drives you? As soon as you learn something, it seems like you're out there trying to teach other people about it.
Yeah. Well, I like to share what I know how to do because I know people aren't around forever. And, you know, I'm not like, I'm 50 years old. I'm getting wispy about mortality. No, I felt this way. I thought about mortality more when I was 18 than I do now. Like, it concerned me on a daily basis. I've always felt like, this sounds really cheesy, but I've always felt like kind of a bright spark of life in me. And just, it's been bursting to get out since I was, you know, could talk. And I've always been a sponge for information. You know, I learned to read before I went to kindergarten. I got made fun of in kindergarten because I could read the first day in kindergarten. And, you know, I used to like cut class in high school to go to the library so I could learn something. This is all pre-internet. And then I jumped on the internet, you know, in 1991 on Gopher protocol before the web at the public library in San Francisco. I was always into like, what can I do to, both reach out to the whole world and like taste the whole world, you know. And I've done a lot of traveling. I've, you know, played in a band, played in 46 states in America and 6 countries in Europe, and have always done stuff starting with my first band, Baby Opaque, you know, when I was 20. I've been doing stuff for 30 years now that has had fans, you know, that has had people dig it and it means something to them. And I've never been huge with it, but as my dad said, and this, he's another influence on me, you know, he always ran a lot of different companies and was always self-employed. And, you know, his kind of big hit in life, his big like praise in life was at one point he got interviewed by, is either Inc. magazine or Fortune 500. It was an article about small businessmen, and he got like one line in it, and I love the line. It's kind of been my motto. He said, you know, I've worn a lot of hats in my day. None of them have made me rich, but that's how I make my living. And I've done a lot of things, whether or not they made money or, you know, and I do them whether they make money anyway. And some do and some don't. And I don't quit my day job. I still do technical writing and, you know, recording my wife doing voiceover a little bit for people, and mainly tech writing. And then make a little bit of money at documentary filmmaking from royalties from things I did years ago. But I've always kind of wanted to transmit what I have. Cause I, not that I feel like it's stealing if I keep it to myself, but I get a kick out of helping people. You know, I've kind of been like into the open source technology idea since before I was on computers. That's basically what it comes down to.
And it feels like in an era where people are constantly complaining, education is a right, education should be free. They're ignoring so many of the great teachers that are out there making education available for free right now.
Yeah. And another reason that I always did the do it yourself stuff is I've always done good media that was interesting and different from other media in the same realm, whether it's filmmaking or music or writing or podcasting or doing radio. But I've always done stuff that when I first started doing it, there was like no way that the, you know, commercial publishers of it would accept it. Like, I played in this band, Bomb. We made records, we toured, we lost money at it, we made money at it. We did whatever we could by any means necessary to keep that band going and keep putting out great music and playing to like, you know, 50 to 100 people on tour for gas money. And playing like, you know, at our peak, probably 300 to 500 people in San Francisco, you know, never a fiercely popular band, but a fierce cult following. But when we started in 86, and, you know, like by 1990, when we kind of had an audience and had toured a few times, 1991, like there was literally no freaking way a major label would consider doing anything with a band like us. And then Jane's Addiction started selling gold records, started selling millions of records. We did not get signed because Nirvana got signed. We got signed around the same time Nirvana got signed, because of Jane's Addiction, because they were the fluke out of left field. And all of a sudden labels were considering bands they never would have considered before. And the same thing with podcasting. Like when I started podcasting in 2006, or even when I started the Freedom Fiends with Nima Vedati, and even the fact that Free Talk Live was already on radio, Neem and I never, ever, ever considered the possibility we could ever be on radio because we swore like sailors. We didn't want to deal with a show clock or ads. We didn't like to do it at the same place at the same time every day. You know, we like to do it whenever we felt like it. And we just were too, we were too in your face. Like, we were vastly pale now compared to what the first, you know, 100 or 200 episodes of The Fiends were. I don't think it's lost anything, but, you know, we would talk about, I don't even know if I want to bother your podcast by saying what we talk about, but you can go back and listen to those old Freedom Fiends episodes. We talked about things that were not radio friendly, even when we were not cussing. So we thought it was impossible, but, you know, we really thought about it. And we're like, well, we're willing to not cuss and, you know, willing to not tell certain stories from our past to make a point, and we can still do good media and be on FCC controlled radio and, you know, bring a true message of total liberty, straight up voluntarism to syndicated radio. There's only two shows in the world that do that. It's Free Talk Live and the Freedom Fiends that do it on commercial radio, because there's no way to do that outside of America. I mean, outside of America, you would either be arrested for doing that, or there is just no way you'd get on the radio doing that. Like, you could not do that in England. You could not do it in Canada. Maybe you could do it in Canada, but you couldn't do it in most of the world. You just, there's no way you'd get on the radio. But it's this kind of weird niche of, like, most of the stations Free Talk Live and the Freedom Fiends are on are, like, literally our shows play between Sean Hannity's show and Rush Limbaugh's show or something like that. And it's this kind of weird little niche of, like, there are, you know, people that own conservative stations. First of all, people that own conservative stations, a few of them are actually liberals, and they're like, ugh, I have to play this other stuff because it's what my station plays. But, well, the Freedom Fiends talk about gay marriage should be legal and weed should be legal. All right, we'll put them on just to irk all the conservatives. But then there's also conservatives that realize either they are libertarians. Some of the program directors or owners of the stations are libertarians, but that's few and far between. But a few of them are. But mostly it's just that there are – that basically the Ron Paul revolution showed conservatives that there is a market for something that's more freedom-oriented than Rush Limbaugh. And for somehow by some fluke of being a total pioneer and not being able to take no for an – or not – you know, Ian Freeman, like, beat the path for this 10 years ago. You know, when he was first calling stations about Free Talk Live, they were like, what's libertarian? You know, and now when I call them, they're like, I know what libertarian is and I don't like it and I'm not putting your show on, but at least they know what libertarian is, you know?
Yeah. And I think that one of the weird things about living right now is that we've actually seen, partially because of technology, partially because of a market demand for it, but we've actually seen that bottleneck kind of losing its effect. And to be honest, in the future, I could totally see more shows like your guys' shows starting to get more of a mainstream acceptance.
Oh, and there's a couple more shows that have been syndicated since the Freedom Fiend started. Actually, I know that the Liberty Beat is now on Genesis Communications Network. They're not a full show. They're the top of the hour, 1 or 2 or 3 minute news thing that's on LRN. But yeah, they're syndicated now. And there's Tony. What's the guy's name? Tony. He was at. I've talked to him. He's a friend of mine. Can't remember his name. But yeah, there's another guy that got syndicated.
Is it Tony Styles?
Tony Styles. Yeah, Tony Styles. Tony Styles is now syndicated on GCN. He was syndicated before too through something else, but I've talked to him extensively. He doesn't like to talk about what he is, but he's pretty close to voluntarist. If not, his show isn't necessarily straight up voluntarist. It's an interview show and it's only one day a week, 1 or 2 hours a week, but you know, it's pointed in the right direction. Let's put it that way.
So with the pretty much a fact, I don't know, it could turn around, but it seems like pretty much it's a fact now that more and more people are looking for this type of message. More and more people are, you know, actively pursuing podcasts and radio shows like this. What is it that you hope to do? Because it seems like you have a lot of what's driving you is to make sure that the people that are stepping up to fill that gap in the market are doing it correctly. So what is it that you're trying to do, and what are your hopes from your work in this aspect of affecting other people's work as we continue down this road?
I don't know. It's kind of cheesy to say, you know, you've heard every musician ever say this, you know, say something to the effect of, you know, if just one person in the crowd gets my songs, it's okay. And they don't usually really mean it, because if only one person in the whole crowd is getting it, they're not making a living. But I'm not trying to make a living at it. So literally, like, you know, the few people, I wouldn't say it's few, but I would say, you know, 30 or 40 people over the past 3 or 4 years have written me and said, you guys brought me directly to Liberty. And, you know, and if 30 or 40 people have written me, that means probably at least 10 times that many or more, you know, 10 to 20 have done it because of listening to us and then not sent us an email. Cause you know, I hear stuff all the time that I like, but I rarely write an email and say, yes, this really changed my life, you know? And I think the ratio is something like 100 to 1. I think I figured that out at some point based on, download numbers on our show versus comments on our show. Although it's probably a longer ratio with us, because I kind of discourage people from commenting on our site. I'm like, you know, we don't take calls. We don't want to talk to people. People are stupid. And, you know, don't send me an email. If you want to tell me I'm great, post it on the website. Then, you know, you're sharing it with other people and I don't have to respond back. And I'm really very into one-sided communication. And it's not because I really think people are horrible. A lot of them are, but a lot of them are wonderful. But it's so much work on top of doing a show, doing the cat herding with 13 or 14 co-hosts, you know, getting more affiliates, calling up stations, introducing them like they've never heard of me, and I have to try to sell them on taking the show, you know, not sell them, like buy it. There's no money exchange. It's basically like ad time. Like we get some of the ad time, the network gets some of the ad time, and the station gets some of the ad time. But, you know, I have to sell them on the idea. Between all the other things I do, you know, 25 to 30 hours a week to maybe make $75 a month on this show. It's basically a hobby. It leaves very little time for directly one-on-one communicating with people. So I encourage them, if they're going to do it on the site where people are going to see it, or better yet, like post about us on another site. But yeah, it's, so, you know, it's probably 1 in 200 people that listen to us and like it actually write us, I would say. So yeah, I would say, you know, we've probably brought 100 people from statism to Liberty. But in the meantime, we've also entertained a lot of libertarians and then made a few of them really mad. So that's success in my book.
Yeah, well, at least you're getting people to think. And sometimes even people that figure that they've got everything already figured out still need something to prod their brain and make them think a little bit. Now, you mentioned the however many, 17, I think you said, different co-hosts on the Freedom Fiends. You do have a lot of people that come on and add their input and all have their own wrestling names.
Yeah.
You've got, in my opinion, you've got some of the greatest people that come on. I love it whenever Lou comes on. I love it whenever Ben comes on. You're not very much like, I'm Dean, I'm the rock star, and you guys are just the backup.
This is something I learned from Free Talk Live. Like, when Nima left the show and we went to seven shows a week, you know, it's 5 at night. And then we had the original 2 on the weekend or in the morning. So, and it's also the only swing shift show that I know of. I asked the guy from Talkers Magazine about that too. And that's pretty hard too, is doing like completely different schedule on the weekend than during the week. But, It's how it had to be, because we already had, you know, 29 stations on, or not, like, I think we had 22 stations on the weekends when we went to 7 nights a week, and then like, or 7 days a week. And then the weeknight shows, I had to go get stations. Like, we started with no stations at night and 22 stations on the weekend. And now we're up to a total of 34 stations. And it's something like, you know, some of them play all 7 days, but it's something like, you know, seven stations on the night shows. And then a whole bunch of, you know, 20, 26 or something, 27, and then some overlap on the weekend shows. So I didn't want to give up the weekend shows and change everything to all night. I would like it to be 7 nights a week if I could, but I've kind of screwed the pooch on that from the start, because I was working around Nima's schedule, and he, you know, had a family, he was starting a family and had a day job. So, my day job, I can do anytime I want. I work from home. So Yeah, it's kind of hard to do, but when I went to the night show too, for the first five, you know, first couple of weeks of it, I called it the night show, a different show. I called it Michael Dean After Dark. And Ian Freeman, when I went to, you know, when Nima finally left, he was just doing the weekend shows. I was doing the other shows with other people, the nighttime shows. And when Nima left, I asked Ian Freeman, and he's great. I can't say enough good about that guy. He's selfless. He helps anybody in Liberty who wants to ask him a question. And I dig that. And, you know, he helped me a lot with radio, and I asked his advice. You know, he's been doing radio professionally for 10 years now. And I said, you know, when I change this, now that Nima's gone, do you think I should change the nighttime show to calling it the Freedom Fiends and having the same format, or keep it Michael Dean After Dark? And he said, I think you should change it to the Freedom Fiends, because if you have a show that has your name on it, you kind of become the guru of it and it goes to your head. And that's why Free Talk Live isn't called the Mark and Ian show or the Ian and Mark show. It's called Free Talk Live because they originally, from the start, and especially after Ian spent 3 months in jail for activism, which, you know, like Mark was freaking out, like, what do I do? He was bringing in co-hosts and like, but basically what they've done has been the template for what I've done, which is literally like open source it to the point where I could be killed and this show would still go on. I could be in jail. I could be in a coma and this show would still go on. Cause right now I've got enough co-hosts that can lead a show and know how to do it, and the network's cool with it, that the show would go on even if I'm not able to do it anymore. And that's the way to do it. And that's part of the whole teaching hospital idea that you mentioned. And the Liberty Media people that the show is just them, or just them answering calls, like almost all of them to a man or to a woman, like it goes to their head and they start to kind of think they're gods and can answer any question even out of what they've studied. And there's some really ugly results with that. And I really think that having co-hosts and not having your name on the show and not being the star of the show really is a good damper on ego. You know, you can still have an ego, but you won't have an insane, huge ego if you're not the star of the show. And I'm smart enough to do that and set it up that way, you know, so it's not going to burn me or harm me by looking foolish like that.
Well, I think it also, at least for me as a listener of your show, I think that it adds a lot of personality, and it adds a lot of where you have one opinion and somebody else has a different opinion or a different take on it. It adds a lot more depth to the show, and I think that the listeners appreciate that. So we're almost out of here. I do want to say thank you again for coming on last minute notice like this. It was awesome of you. So thank you very much.
Cool, man.
Before we go, I'd like you to plug whatever you're working on right now, and if you have any final thoughts for our listeners.
Yeah, I'm not working on anything that needs immediate attention other than, you know, I have some projects in the works, but
Fiend Phone.
No, I don't want to talk about it because we're still working on it and there's no new information. You can go to fiendphone.com and see what's new with that. But freedomfiends.com and creamyradioaudio.com and gunsandweed.com and michaelwd.com. But I guess the two closing things I would have is, one is, don't try to quit your day job if you're doing Liberty Media. Keep your day job and things, and manage your expectations. And be a small, important part of the whole rather than trying to be the rock star in the middle of the room telling everyone what to do. And the second thing is, every piece of media you produce, try to make it as good as you can, as if it's going to be the only thing you'll ever be known for.
All right. Well, thank you very much, Michael. I really appreciate you coming on. And once again, is that freedomfiends.com? And that's with two E's in the fiends.
It's freedom and then Foxtrot Echo Echo November Sierra.com.
All right. Thank you for coming on. I really appreciate it. Listeners, go and check out Michael's website. Go and check out, download all the archives. He's got a great show over there. Tons of great guests as well. Really enjoyable to listen to. Until next week, this is Live Free FM. I'm your host, Nathan Frazier, being joined by Michael Dean tonight. And we'll see you next week. Peace, love, and blessings to y'all.
Worms.
Worms. Peace.